What if your mind worked in pictures instead of words?
My name is Temple Grandin. I'm not like other people. I think in pictures, and I connect them.
Your child is clearly autistic.
Autistic? I'm not familiar.
She's an infantile schizophrenic.
Infantile? So when would she grow out of it? I mean, what's the next step for...
We generally recommend an institution.
She doesn't relate to people in the way that most people do, but she's certainly human. And a lot of people are sort of confused about how autistic people experience the world, and they think because they can kind of have a blunt affect that they're devoid of emotion, and that's not true.
I was very struck by the fact that in her unguarded moments, which is, you know, a lot of the time, she has a quality of kind of feral wariness, like a wild animal, constantly watchful for danger in the world around.
How would you know that cows or horses think in pictures? Well, there's no other way that they could think. If you don't have verbal language, the only way the brain can store the information is pictures.
It is certainly very impressive that she's really learned to predict animal behavior.
Temple Grandin didn't speak until she was 4. Doctors told her parents the best thing for everybody would be if Temple was put in an institution. But today she's a college professor, author of a dozen books, and a specialist in animal science who's so revolutionized the design of cattle feedlots and slaughterhouses that she's been honored by People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. She's also one of the world's most prominent activists on behalf of people with autism. In this edition of Independent Minds, the extraordinary journey of Temple Grandin. I'm David Darcy. Over the next hour, we'll hear Temple share her life story, a firsthand account of what it's like to have a mind that thinks mostly in images, that can sift information with amazing speed and detail. She believes that the special abilities of autistic minds have brought significant benefits to society, and many of the innovators who made the modern computer era possible would today have been diagnosed with some form of the condition.
So I just gave a talk at a large computer show, and I walked into the breakfast room, and everybody was, you know, working on their laptops, and they were not socializing, and it was just full of Asperger's, the undiagnosed ones.
When Temple Grandin was a child in the 1940s, autism was newly diagnosed and often misunderstood. Psychiatrists initially recommended institutionalization for her. When she was young, she didn't talk, cuddle, or play. She didn't have normal relations with her family or her peers. She says people with autism, like herself, will always experience things differently. And Temple Grandin thinks in pictures. Here's an example. When Temple was in a KCSU studio at Colorado State University, as I often do when I start an interview, I asked her if she was comfortable and had a glass of water.
I started getting pictures flashing through my mind of different studios I've been in and different things I have drunk out of while I do radio interviews. I'm also seeing different water fountains around.
The mere mention of a glass of water triggered a rapid succession of pictures in her mind.
I'm now seeing a big mug at home that I drink out of. You know, so I'm sort of like in the water drinking file right now and going through pictures, and they are specific pictures.
It was only as an adult that she realized this was at all unusual, that neurotypical people, whom we like to call normal, don't experience the world that way.
Like if I say to you, access your memory on church steeples, I just see specific ones. But I was shocked when I found out that a lot of people get this vague sort of generic sort of church steeple. You see, for me, there's no generic ones.
By articulating her experience, Temple Grandin bridges the world of autism and that of neurotypical people. By speaking from within her disorder, she's guided specialists who are trying to understand autism. Professor Simon Baron Cohen studies autism at Cambridge University.
Temple Grandin was certainly one of the earliest examples of people who could tell us from their point of view, if you like, not just from the perspective of the scientist or the doctor observing the person, but from the inside, if you like, what it feels like to have autism.
But Grandin wasn't always so articulate. Language was a huge challenge for her, as it is for most people with autism. Many with the condition can't speak at all, and never will. Grandin didn't begin to talk until she was 4. She also rejected any affection. Temple's mother, Eustacia Cutler, in an interview with the BBC.
She didn't smile. She didn't laugh. When laughter finally came, It erupted out of her in wild spasms, along with spitting. And her father was furious. He said, "She's retarded." Well, then it got worse. Temple began to tear off the wallpaper. She began to defecate and smear it all over the wallpaper.
Back then, in the late 1940s, some doctors believed autism was caused by mothers denying children the physical affection they needed. When Temple's mother consulted doctors about her daughter's condition, their prognosis was, well, hopeless.
I'm sure it's just a phase, but...
Your child is clearly autistic.
Julia Ormond and Steve Uzell in a scene from the new HBO film Temple Grandin.
Autistic. I'm not familiar.
She's an infantile schizophrenic. Perhaps if you had your husband call me.
My husband is a very busy man, and I graduated from Harvard, so why don't you try me?
I'm sorry. It's been suggested that it may be a lack of bonding with the mother. That at a crucial phase, the mother was cold, aloof, when the child most needed physical affection.
Way back in 1949, when I was first diagnosed at age 2 and a half, they just said I was brain damaged. They didn't even know what autism was. You know, then it was a couple of 3 years later that the autism diagnosis came in. And they just normally put, you know, nonverbal little kids like me that rocked and screamed in institutions.
Temple's mother visited one of those institutions. What she saw was shocking and typical for the time.
She walked into this horrible ward at the state hospital of autistic adults and kids just sitting there rocking and nobody talking, just nothing. And she says, "There's no way she's going to let me get into that situation."
So Temple's mother worked with her child to engage the intelligence she knew was there, but Temple was still out of reach.
One of the things that made my mother realize that she could get through to me is she was playing Bach on the piano, and she realized I was humming the Bach.
Years later, Pete Townsend of the band The Who came to a similar conclusion about music.
You know, I stumbled on the idea that music might solve the difficulties of autism just really through writing Tommy.
The character Tommy in the 1969 rock opera is an otherwise uncommunicative but highly focused pinball prodigy.
That death from a blind kid sure plays a mean pinball.
So when I was actually introduced to some of the people working in the experiments that they were doing in the early 70s, where music and rhythm were being successfully used to bring children out of autistic withdrawal, I was just stunned.
How do you think he does? I don't know. What makes him so good? Ain't got no distractions, can't hear no buzz and bells.
Both Pete Townsend and Temple's mother recognized an essential feature of autism. It blocks social interaction and can cut it off entirely. But that social isolation doesn't mean that autistic people aren't intelligent. Most researchers today believe autism is a neurological and biomedical disorder. They describe a spectrum ranging from people who can't communicate to savants with social difficulties and extraordinary skills, to highly functioning individuals who perceive the world in a way very different from most of us. Psychologist Uta Frith has studied autism for decades at the Institute for Cognitive Neuroscience at University College London.
The effect of autism is very selective, and this is what makes it such a puzzling condition. We find at the same time very serious problems in social communication, which are sort of a definition of what autism is. And then we find that people who have autism and these tremendous difficulties in interacting with other people, learning from other people, can still have very high intelligence and have even special talents.
Temple Grandin.
Some people think you have to have language to be conscious, which I think is absolute rubbish.
Grandin cites her own memories from before she could speak. She recalls her childhood not with the kind of memories normal people might have, but as detailed images, almost like frames in a comic book or film images racing through her head. Like many children with autism, Temple Grandin had trouble understanding basic conversations. Professor Simon Baron Cohen says even if people with autism understand the words, the nonverbal cues of a conversation can be frustrating.
And then you can go to an even more complex level when we start thinking about the social uses of language, when people say the opposite of what they mean because they want to use humour or use sarcasm, or they might use language in a non-literal way, for example, using metaphor. So it very quickly becomes apparent that language isn't that straightforward, that you can't simply look up in some mental dictionary the meanings of words and hope to be able to understand language. There's a lot more to it.
Psychologist Uta Frith describes the struggle in autism with conversation and social interactions as mind blindness.
Now, in the case of mind blindness, as we called it, you can't look at the world of people in the same way as other people. It seems to us, non-mind blind people, that we can somehow intuit what other people are thinking, feeling, wanting, what they're going to do next when we interact with them. It's second nature to us, not something we have to spend a lot of thinking time about. In fact, we do it unconsciously. What about a world where you can't so immediately, intuitively see that other people have feelings and wishes and beliefs in their heads, and that these inner states project what other people are going to do and explain why they behave in the way they do? So we think it's this type of problem, mind blindness, which explains a lot of the very special difficulties in social communication in autism.
This mind blindness made social interaction painfully awkward for Temple Grandin. Teachers and children at school couldn't understand why she didn't get what to them was obvious.
The only refuges I had away from teasing were the special interests. They were horseback riding, an electronics lab, and model rocket club.
And there, she realized that she could turn her disability into an asset.
I was always good at making things. I mean, when I was a very young child, I made things out of cardboard and adhesive tape. And then when I was in high school, I learned carpentry. I mean, I just learned these things, and I was always good at making things. And so I just figured out how to make it.
As a teenager, she struggled with debilitating anxiety attacks.
I was 15, going on 16 at the time, and puberty was in full blast, had all my hormones raging, and I was just so anxious. I was just like in a constant state of stage fright all the time.
Then one summer on vacation at her aunt's cattle ranch in Arizona, Grandin watched animals being vaccinated. They were herded into what's called the squeeze chute, a narrow passage that restrains them so they can be examined. And as she watched, she had an inspiration.
Well, we were driving along the road, and it just so happened that the cattle were being worked. And I said, well, let's stop and look at that. And we stopped and looked at it. I remember sitting up on this wooden fence and watching the calves go through the squeeze chute. They were probably 400 or 500-pound calves. And I noticed, and they were just giving them shots. They weren't doing anything painful to them. They were just getting vaccinated. And I noticed that some of the animals kind of relaxed. So I go, oh, I think I want to try that. So, of course, I went and tried out the squeeze chute.
The device had two flat metal sides and a lever to compress them against the cows to hold them in place for vaccination. Grandin crawled in on her hands and knees and pleaded with her aunt to pull the lever.
Close the sides! Close the sides! Harder! More!
As soon as she felt the sides of the chute squeeze against her, a sense of calm came over her. She realized that pressure on her body might be a solution to the panic attacks that plagued her since she was a young girl. And instead of using the chute in the cattle pens, Grandin decided to build her own. She set out with a hammer and nails and soon had a working prototype of a squeeze machine for people. Claire Danes tried out the squeeze machine as she played Temple Grandin in the HBO film.
A lot of autistic people, when they're young, before they even know that they have this particular kind of sensitivity, will fantasize about wrapping themselves up very tightly. And I think that we all love the sensation of being held, of being restricted. So that's not so alien. But this contraption is pretty interesting. So you kind of go on your knees and you walk into it, and she's created a lever that you can manipulate yourself. and it increases the pressure of the sides that are padded. Her design became much more sophisticated and cushy over time. The models improved over the years. I kind of wanted one in the end.
But when Temple moved her squeeze machine into her college dorm, it scared her roommate. Administrators took it away and said the only way she could keep the device was if she could scientifically prove its effectiveness. Her teacher, William Carlock, realized that her fixation on the squeeze machine could motivate her to learn crucial academic skills.
He says, well, if you want to find out why it's relaxing, you've got to learn how to look up journal articles in the scientific literature. Now, of course, back then, you had to look them up in these great big books, and we didn't even have a copier then, and so you had to write the abstracts down by hand on index cards and put them in cooking files. I mean, it was a lot of work, but that was still using the motivation of the fixation.
Using that scientific method, Grandin won a victory against the rules, the administrators, and the students who'd called her a freak. She showed that the machine could be comforting, even for so-called ordinary students. She's used it ever since to minimize one of autism's worst symptoms.
And therapists today use deep pressure on autistic kids. They may wrap a child up in a mat to calm them down, or might wear a weighted vest. Pressure is calming. But one of the secrets to making deep pressure calming is no more than 15 or 20 minutes. After 15 or 20 minutes, the calming effect wears off. Because if you leave it on all the time, then it gets uncomfortable. You know, and I found that just with myself. I mean, I get in the squeeze machine and stay there for 15 or 20 minutes, it's just great. But if I was to stay in there 2 hours, it would not be great.
Temple Grandin found a new way to address the painful anxiety of autism. Even experts like developmental psychologist Uta Frith were amazed.
I have seen two of her designs. I've used them in a publication. I've asked her for them to be reproduced so that other people can marvel at them. She is certainly one of the most unusual autistic people in the world. So in some sense, she is not, you know, you can't say, oh, well, that is autism. It's just that she is such a fantastic example of how you can use the best of your resources and talents that you have, and how you can, with help, with time, with determination, with high intelligence, overcome so many of the problems that are there in autism.
One thing I've tried to do is find practical ways to solve things. I'm not into rhetoric. I'm not into rhetoric at all. I'm only into what makes change on the ground.
Temple Grandin's focus and her attention to detail were beyond the abilities of most neurotypical people. After the break, we'll hear how this unlikely pioneer would challenge corporations, cowboys, and ranchers to bring more humane treatment to animals that we raise for food. I'm David Darcy. This is Independent Minds, Temple Grandin. Find more about autism and Temple Grandin at murraystreet.com/Temple Grandin.
Production support for Independent Minds comes from HBO, presenting Temple Grandin, Saturday, February 6th at 9 p.m.